the special offers on new demo and used vehicles now at Myers.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1200.
Barzell looks it over carefully now, trying to take advantage of Coyle. Goes left circle for Eberle's try. He scores! Third power play goal of the game for the Islanders! And Jordan Eberle has given New York their first two-goal lead of the night. It is 4-2 Islanders!
Carter on the right wing. He hits by Corey Perry. It goes by Armia. Centers it. Stastny. Two big saves and a third by Carey Price, who snaps it out of the air and keeps this a tie game. Hellebuck and Toffoli coming. Pass picked off on the boards by Suzuki. Tried to center it. Coleman blocked it. They both swatted that loose puck now. Caulfield gets it loose up front. Score! Toffoli! Tyler Toffoli! And the Canadians are off to the Stanley Cup semifinal.
TSN 1200.
Yep, that's how it sounded last night here on TSN 1200. Thanks to our friends at TSN 690 for the game-winning, series-winning call from Dan Robertson. Tyler Toffoli off a beautiful feed from Cole Caulfield, 139 into overtime. And Montreal, last team into the playoffs, last team through to round two, first team into round three, completing the four-game sweep of the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, incredible to think, JR. Just a week ago, everybody was trash. Everybody's about to be fired. Now a completely different vibe in Montreal, and lots of people thinking, hey, could this be 1993 all over again 28 years later?
Eight wins down, still eight more to go. Mm-hmm. The eight toughest are still to go, but hey, if you've won eight, you're halfway there. All right, let's get right to the phones, shall we? And welcome, as we do each and every weekday morning at this time, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. We say hello in Boston to Pierre McGuire. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Excellent, JR. Good morning. Hey, Sean.
Morning, Pierre.
All right, we'll get to your game because you were busy doing the Islanders-Boston game last night, Pierre. But we got to start with Montreal. And what odds, Pierre, what odds would you have said as Montreal finished up the regular season that you thought that they would come out of the division and be into the Final Four?
I wouldn't give you any odds. I didn't think they were going to beat Toronto. And, Toronto's got a lot of soul-searching to do. The Canes deserve a lot of credit. Carey Price deserves a lot of credit. The big guys in defense deserve a lot of credit. They obviously took advantage of their opportunity, but I would have said they had no chance. You know, the truth of the matter is I don't think anybody thought they were going to beat Toronto. And if they did, they didn't spout off on it publicly, I can tell you that.
Also, on the other side, how much of a major collapse is this on the Winnipeg Jets after sweeping Edmonton?
Well, it is a collapse, but also you got to look at it realistically. Their defense is still a work in progress. There's no question about that. The Stastny injury, I know he came back to play, but he clearly wasn't 100%. The suspension to Seifele obviously didn't help them at all. Pierre-Luc Dubois' disappointing play in the playoffs and the regular season hasn't helped them. And to me, the biggest thing was their preparation for game one of the series. They just weren't ready to play, and you could see it, and Montreal was, and that set them back a very long way. So there's a lot of mitigating circumstances here. The nine-day layoff didn't help them, but that's probably their own fault. As a staff, they're going to have to look at their preparation for the series. You always do that, whether you win or lose. You know, what we do right, what we do wrong, but I think there's a lot of mitigating circumstances with Winnipeg. I'd be more upset as a Toronto Maple Leaf fan right now than I would as a Winnipeg Jets fan. Mm.
On that, Pierre, and then you mentioned all those factors that come into play for Winnipeg. As Kevin Cheveldayoff, the general manager, is assessing, I don't call it the wreckage of what happened here in this second round, how much of his thinking on, hey, do I retain the coach, do I retain certain players or whatever, comes down to the fact of going out in four straight and really, I mean, if we're being honest, really not putting up much of a battle, despite the factors you talked about, as opposed to, hey, winning a game or two, but playing it from the tips. Like, that was the most disappointing. It's one thing to lose. It's another to go down pretty meekly, to be quite honest with you.
Oh, I think that's fair. Oh, you're absolutely fair to say that. They went down meekly. There's no question about it. I watched all the games like you do, and I got back for, you know, I'm working in a crazy series right now. Like, this series is nuts. I'm just telling you. And then you come back and you watch Montreal and Winnipeg, and you're like, it's two different leagues. This isn't even the same league. So you talk about, yeah, no, definitely. Meekly's a fair word. And so they've got a lot of soul searching to do in Winnipeg. But I would also say, to be fair to everybody, I don't know what happened in their nine games off between the Edmonton sweep and the start of the Montreal series, but something had to happen in terms of their preparation or maybe letting their guard down, because their game one performance was really bad. There was no intensity. Right from the start of that game, they looked flat, they looked slow, they looked comfy cozy when they had no right to be. Montreal looked hard, they looked grizzled, they looked, you know, mean, they looked fast, they looked disciplined, they looked ready. So something happened for Winnipeg, and I'm convinced from this day forward that that game one performance was so bad it set the stage for the rest of the tournament for them.
So bad, Mr. Scheifele has to sit out the start of next year, Pierre. So there you go. From Montreal side, tactically, do you take the approach you took against the Toronto Maple Leafs in the next round, or you just kind of keep building off of what you did against Winnipeg, where it was a little more offense-oriented?
Well, they're going to have to. Well, I don't know how much offense you're going to be able to manufacture against either one of those teams. Maybe a little bit more against Colorado than against Vegas. Vegas really buttons the door down. You can ask Colorado right now, the last two games, they've had the door closed on them pretty quick. So playing against Vegas is one thing. Playing against Colorado is another. They're two different types of way to prepare just because of the way the teams play. But I would say, again, you know, it's crazy to say it because Canadians have defied the odds through the first two rounds, and they deserve all the credit in the world. They're the ones that did it, and they've done it unbelievably well. They're still the underdog going into the next round. There's no question about it. Whomever wins, and no matter how long the series goes, they're still the underdog.
Again, I hate to get ahead because it's 2-2 on the other side. With the big four on the back end, though, do you think the more favorable matchup for Montreal would be Vegas versus instead of Colorado?
Yeah, 100%. Just the speed quotient's different. And don't forget, Colorado's going to get Nazem Kadri back at some point, too, here. So that's going to make a difference in terms of how they slot. That moves J.D. Crawford deeper into the lineup. And if he's playing against, you know, third-pairing defensemen with his speed, that causes problems. And you got to think a kid like Newhook's going to continue to evolve and get better more and more reps he gets. So that's going to be... that's going to be the thing to watch as they go forward here, you know, which team's going to win, because they are two different styles.
Cole Caulfield's evolution during this playoff has been interesting to watch. Pierre, he spends the first two games sitting in the press box and then slowly gets integrated into the lineup. And, you know, in part of that Toronto series, even when he was playing, I remember you didn't see him in the third period if it was a tight game and Montreal was ahead or whatever. Watching the game last night, in the final minute of regulation, he's out there in a tie game, and he's out there in the first minute or minute and a half of overtime and sets up the game winner. Is that more credit to him, or is that more credit to, I guess, the head coach at the end of the day in deciding to put him in situations like that?
It's recognizing the asset that they have. I'm not sure that they were really familiar with the asset from a coaching perspective until they got it, and then, you know, you could see the fundamental flaws of the player are he's not great in his own zone. He's not great with pucks around the boards. But man, oh man, is he electrifying offensively. So you can deal with the shortcomings defensively as long as he gives you the constant offense, and he gives you the constant offense. And so they recognized the asset value of the player a little bit later than maybe they should have. But that player in particular is a testament to Trevor Timmons and the scouting staff in Montreal. That was a tremendous pick, 15th overall. That was a guy that a lot of people said probably going to be a little too small to play and with regularity in the NHL, probably won't put up the same kind of numbers. And that was complete. All those people that thought that completely wrong and, you know, said it at the time. So they deserve a lot of credit as an amateur scouting staff there in Montreal. And it took a while for the coaches to buy in, but they finally did buy in. And now you can see what the player can provide.
Yeah, and the biggest factor, Pierre, how different does that power play look? And for a smaller player with the quickness on the half wall, both feet and hands, they're able to back off the opposition. And that possession they had in the first period last night might have been the best look that they've had the entire season just based on his ability and his confidence.
And don't forget, what it does is it opens up other opportunities, too, because when you pre-scout, you pay attention to the different pieces of weaponry that the opposition has. So now they have to overcommit somebody to come up and take away that shot from him or the attack angle off the half boards. But then on the other side, if they do that, that opens up Suzuki, and then up high it can open up Weber or Petrie, depending on how they want to play it. So, he can do a lot more than just put the puck on goal. He can break down your penalty killing scheme and open up opportunities for other players.
Once again, Montreal for a seventh straight game gets the first goal. They never trail in the game. They haven't trailed in the seven games. It's now the third longest streak in NHL playoff history for not trailing in a game. We all know how much trouble they had scoring goals. Has it turned, if they end up, whoever they play in the next series, if they end up trailing in a game, has their confidence now reached a point where it doesn't matter anymore, or is the first goal still getting a lead still a huge deal, especially with Montreal?
I think for them it really matters that they get the lead so they can maintain and sustain their game plan. That's just the reality of how they have to play right now. I mean, going forward, they're going to keep adding pieces and pieces. They've got some guys in their pipeline that are going to end up being pretty good. But no, I think in order for them to play the style that they play, getting the lead is really important. And if they don't and they have to open up and play from behind, that's a very dangerous game, especially no matter whether you're playing Vegas or Colorado. That'd be very, very difficult for them.
All right, let's talk about your series. So you're in the middle, you're immersed in the middle of the Islanders and the Bruins, and man alive, you're right, that is something, and you're there in person watching it. We're watching through television, an incredible series. The Islanders win Game 5 last night, 5-4. How did they do it?
Well, their goalie, Semyon Varlamov, was phenomenal. That's probably the best he's played this playoff season. He was just off the charts good, especially at key times when the Bruins were really starting to push and the crowd was going wild. Barry Trotz probably coached his best game of the playoffs. I thought he was magnificent. I made it a point of reference for the broadcast, just showing the subtle little line changes he was making to get the right matchups because he didn't get the last change on the road. He called a timeout when Boston was really pushing, and he calmed his guys down. And one of the things he says, we have to stop backing up. And I reported that on television, and they did. They stopped backing up and started attacking again. I thought Barry was phenomenal. I thought Varlamov was great. And I just thought that more than anything else, the Islanders sense that they have the Bruins wounded because of their injuries on defense. And they're going after them. And when they go after them, they're very good. They're very hard to play against. When they backed off like they did halfway through the third period, they're not as good, and the Bruins can really dictate the terms. So I think the big thing for them going into Game 6 is being super aggressive.
Was this just not Rask night? Because at the end of the day, they also outshot them 44-19. Injury or illness on Rask, Pierre?
I don't want to say too much. I don't think it's appropriate for me, but I'd say that he's not 100%. How's that?
Okay.
If he's not 100%, why is he playing?
Oh, you can play. You can. There are lots of guys that play that aren't 100%, and they're dealing with a raw rookie. You tell me. I mean, Sean, you've been through it. I've been through it. You look at most of the lineups by this time of the year, especially when you're into a deep physical series like this one, it doesn't matter if you're a goalie, a defenseman, or a forward. I don't think too many guys are 100%, JR.
No, yeah. I understand that, but I mean, I know Swayman has been dressing as the backup, but they do have Halak. You want to talk about experienced guy and a guy who's come through in the playoffs before.
They're not going down there. I don't believe so. No, okay. I don't think so. I think it's going to be Swayman or Rask the rest of the way.
Yeah, and the only I agree with you, Pierre. Just on sometimes with the goaltender, if the physical limitations are so great, that's, I think, a little different than a positional player. Having said that, any chance we see Swayman for Game 6, or was this just, hey, a rest for Rask, and for sure he'll be in the twine?
I would be absolutely shocked if Tuukka Rask didn't play in Game 6. You know, everybody was talking about Tuukka in Game 4. And Game 3, you know, I mean, again, he played really well. He's had a good series.
Yeah.
He's had a very good series, but I don't think he's 100%.
Bruce Cassidy went into the coaching handbook after the game and talked about the officiating, and I think he's just at the line, Pierre, where he's not going to get a fine, but he got his message across. The penalties ended up being 4-2, Islanders getting the 4 power plays.
Right.
Did you think it was a well-officiated game?
It was a hard game to officiate. I'd rather say it that way. It's just there's so much stuff going on. And I said at the start of the game, because they let a couple things go, I said, okay, if this is going to be the standard the whole night, you got to let that be the standard the whole night. If they're going to have the shift in sand, and the problem has been in this series, and I don't know how big a problem, because I don't think it's affected the outcome of any game in this series. I just think the players on the ice have determined the outcome of the game. I really do. I don't think anybody's been jobbed. But here's the one thing, the standard from game to game in this series, and I can't speak to the other ones, but in this series has been shifting sand. One game it's called one way, the next game it's called another, and this has been, without a doubt, the most physical and old-school series we've seen in a long time. It really has been. I've done a lot of series. this one is a very old school series, and it's been very difficult to officiate.
I have not followed it. You're right there. Are they using the same? Are the same officials always working together? And are they working a lot of the same series, or how is that? At least from the games you've done, yeah,
it's been different. Yeah. Chris Lee worked the other day. I didn't even see his name on the roster here for Game Five. Francis Charron was a backup for Games 3 and 4, and then he was in the lineup last night with Frankie Saint Laurent. Jean-Hubert was in this series. I mean, we've had a lot of different officials in this series, so different guys and not really teams, no.
Would you like to see, and I don't know, I think they've done it where they've done two games in a row, and I know, I'm not talking regular season.
Well, this year.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about in the playoffs. And I know it's a merit-based thing. If you do well, you get the reward of playoff assignments. But just for speaking to the consistency that you say is a huge part of this, if you have the same officials do, I don't know, a couple of games in a row. Or maybe, I mean, is it out of the box to assign two guys to an entire series? Like, would the NHL ever think of something like that?
I think they'll think of anything. I think anything's on the table. But, I think it's really important because I know everybody's, especially after what Bruce said, and I don't fault him. I kind of get what he's doing. He's trying to deflect. I totally get it. It's part of the deal. That's what coaches do. It takes us back to that, you know, infamous speech that Brian Burke gave in between in a series when he was in Vancouver, and he was talking about the Sedins just getting, you know, overwhelmingly beat up.
Sedin is not Swedish for punch me in the face.
Exactly. So he had that big talk there, and I think a lot of people have started to do that ever since then. And I think more than anything else, it's to deflect. Bruce's coach, I said the last night, I thought Bruce coached a great game. I thought Trotz coached a great game. But I don't think in this series in particular, I don't think the series has been decided because of inept officiating. I can tell you that right now.
I don't want to plan going in, but would you also look from a Bruins side, because that's where the complaining comes from, when you do outshoot somebody 44-19, certainly you possess the puck more, you're in the offensive zone, would there be the argument, hey, at least should be 4-2 us, just based on the simple fact we thoroughly outplayed them?
Oh, yeah, but what about the cross-check to a guy's face in the neutral zone? That's silly.
Yeah,
can't do that. And they listen in game number. I'm just doing the math now because there's so many games. In one of the games, you had back to back penalties. Pasternak with a slash in the back of a guy's leg, and it definitely happened. I called it. I was sitting right there, and then Marchand with a high stick to a guy's face in the neutral zone too. After he was frustrated, those are penalties you can't take. Those are graphic penalties. When a guy shoots the puck over the glass like Bergeron did last night, they have no choice but to call it.
Did they also get a break on the Krejci call the other night, too? I mean, that could have easily been spearing.
Absolutely. Yeah. They called it slashing. Yeah. So, I mean, that's why I don't want to beat up the officials here. I think this series has been unbelievable. It's done a great service to the league. It's been great for the fans, I can tell you that. The TV numbers are through the roof, through the roof. And, you know, they deserve a lot of credit on both sides. I don't think it's the officials that are determining the outcome of this series.
Good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. And thank you, as always, for your time. And look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow.
Oh, my gosh. It's my pleasure, JR. Take care of yourself, Sean. Have a great day. Be safe, everybody.
NBC's Pierre Maguire on TSN 1200 is a presentation of Myers Automotive Group.
All 13 Myers locations are open for sales and service. Book your appointment today. See Myers.ca for more. Myers, always here for you.
Only three would be possible to be protected. Is there any, and whether it's on Colin White, maybe dad not, but he's only been here a year, like, is something, if some of what comes into your thinking that, hey, if I say to this guy, essentially when you expose a guy in expansion draft, you're saying, yeah, given our druthers, we'd rather not have you. Is there anything to the whole team dynamic of... I don't want to let this player know that we'd prefer not to have you anymore by exposing you in the draft. Does that come into the thing here? Or is it just, hard choices, man. It's the NHL. Yeah. Sorry, it's business.
Yeah, there can be a timeshare. It's communication. It's also kind of from the asset side. Like I said, you just signed Dadonov. You're going to pretend, well, he didn't have a great first year. He's going to come back and be better. That could be pressure from management versus necessarily the asset. So I think there's an argument on all those guys. And on Chris Tierney, I look at this, and again, never a great skater, JR, but if you said to me between the three, between White, Tierney, and Dadonov, who might come back and be a more functional player, I wonder if it might be Tierney, only because I really can't explain why during COVID suddenly had a terrible year where I looked at Dadanov and thought, you know what, at 32 years old, man, I'm not feeling it. And on Colin White, I've just seen too much. So for sure, those are things you're discussing, pressure points internally, not wanting to be embarrassed, as you said, kind of the player. But I would also say at this point, Colin White last year, the talk was he felt pressure from his contract. Then you have a year like this. Now it's kind of more like, hey, we're paying an awful lot of dough here right now. We quite simply need you to perform, and not going to worry too much about anybody's feelings being hurt.
Yeah, but you're not saying that to their face, are you?
No. But again, this would always be if you have a young athlete or any athlete, and I'll say with Dadanov, I mean, to me, he looked like a guy that really struggled physically on the ice. If I don't feel like a guy came, and this is just speculation on my part, it's not him, it's not any one player, but if I don't feel like you're living up to your end of putting in the work, then absolutely I'm going to come after you. If you've done all the work and it's just a mistake on my part, then there's nothing I can say.
There has never been a hesitation back to the Brian Murray days, and Pierre Dorion learned under the wing of Brian Murray. There's never been a hesitation to publicly, I'd say humiliate is a strong word, but you know what I mean? Like
call
like,
people out. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's never been a hesitation in that before. So would not surprise me.
Yeah, I don't think Pierre Dorion is in the shoes right now, obviously, of Brian Murray, but I also think his circumstance, you're playing a bit of a shell game here of certainly that's a nice thing to do, but I don't know if you're quite in that position where these are kind of your mistakes so you can necessarily use that tactic. There's enough you could do behind the scenes, but I totally understand what you're saying. But I think the Ottawa Senators need to be a little further in the process before you start publicly calling out some of your guys.
All right. More on that. Any thoughts? You can share it with us. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. And again, this whole discussion started with the tee up that Connor Brown is going to join us on the show coming up just after 9 o'clock this morning. I went out to heat up my coffee during the last break, came back, and TSN, of course, broadcasting the French Open, which is early afternoon over there. And I noticed that the quarterfinal on the women's side was wrapping up. Remember Bianca Andreescu in the first round? Sixth seed, right? Had a real good match. And it looked like at one point that everything was going her way and she was going to win it. And it was against an unranked opponent, Tamara Zidansk, I believe is her name.
Yeah.
She just won the quarterfinals.
Oh, wow.
She's
okay.
from Slovakia.
Okay.
She's come out of the middle of nowhere. Now she's in the semifinals at the French Open.
Is she a younger player, Tara?
I think so. Yeah, I believe so. So anyway.
Strong tennis name as well.
Tamara Zidansk. For sure clay court written all over it.
Yeah, very much.
All right, we'll take a break at 8:47. Still to come. We'll get into some NBA playoff talk. Haven't really touched on that yet. And much more as we continue along here. We'll look at this day in sports history next hour. Celebrate some sports and hockey birthdays as well as we roll on here. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Welcome back, 8:53. Somebody just texted at 12-1200, and we love your texts when you do. Standard messaging rates apply. Derek Stepan, cheap free agent center. that one didn't quite work out so well for Ottawa.
Yeah. Almost at that time, Jared, to be quite honest with you, a good story that he got hurt and kind of went away, because that was that's a guy I wouldn't be shocked if he never plays in the NHL again.
It was interesting, though, to note, and I don't remember which of the young Sens said it at the end of the season on Garbage Bag Day, but a couple of them, at least two, I remember referencing that Derek Stepan, and there was no Derek Stepan, there was not a leading question put to them like, what effect did Derek Stepan have in his time with Ottawa? It's like his name was brought up by a couple of the younger players that even though he wasn't there for a long time, he did have a positive influence on the team.
Well, he is. He's a great leader. If he had come in and stayed healthy and you'd not given up much for him, and if you had a real good center ice of, if White had turned out, JR, let's just use that hypothetically, and it's Pinto, Norris, White, and all of a sudden you slot him into the fourth spot, well, I could see that, as a utility guy, good guy, plays on a line with Watson and Formanton, something like that, but trying to force him into the two slot. This is why I go back to Timmy Stutz on his report card and give him an A, is that, he's just not there. And he got a little bit better, but he's a guy that flat out physically was hanging on. And like I said, I would not be shocked if he doesn't play another game in the NHL.
Reg Texan says, I certainly agree that Colin White is overpaid, but not really that big a deal unless the Sens spend close to the cap. which Eugene has already walked that back. That's from Reg. Well, the issue, Reg, in my opinion, is not so much, I mean, you're right, in the here and now, as the Ottawa Senators are more toward the salary cap floor than the salary cap limit, it's not so much the here and now. It's the piper is about to be paid here in terms of the young players and the amount of money they're going to have to be paid. And Colin White's contract, as it comes towards its end, is when it really becomes problematic because it goes up.
Yeah.
In the final year of his deal, he's $6.25 million in cash.
Yeah.
Now, his cap hit remains the same, but it's still $5 million for a guy who we're saying, what, at best is now a third-line player on this team, which is too much money. But then he becomes more difficult to trade because his salary cap hit is high, and he makes even more money in his contract. So the point is, if you're going to try to rid yourself of that contract, do it now because it ain't happening later. And again, the option is still there to buy him out at only one third after next season.
Yeah.
If next season is not good again for Colin White or middling, then the option will be there if the Ottawa Senators cannot find a trade partner for them to just buy him out. And and the expense will be less than $1 million per year.
And it could be a selling point to another team that's interested in doing that. JR, listen, take him. Here's your option you could end up doing. And I'll be quite honest, if I'm the White camp, I would be planning on that financially because it's going to be difficult. Also, you just have to go into, and not everything's slotted perfectly, but you were really starting to get the house in order previous summer, and even this year, your owner gave you the money to buy out Bobby Ryan, where it's okay, no more of Bobby coming back, no more of the story expectations. Next thing you turn around, you add Daddy onto the books, and flat out, he's not very good. Tierney, White, and Daddy right now for making $15 million, it ain't working. So where they slot in, it becomes a problem at some point from your internal budget, which none of us have any idea what it is, but to pretend you can look the other way, at some point it bites you. And also in the negotiation, a lot of guys will roll into the room and say, well, you want to talk to me, man? You're paying this guy 4.75. I'm better than him, so you better start north of that.
Yeah, my number starts with a 5.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Exactly.
A couple of other notes, hockey notes. The American Hockey League announced, the Board of Governors announced yesterday a regular season next year schedule, 72 games. So back to the same old, same old. And of course, the Sens affiliate will revert back to Belleville after playing here in Ottawa this full year. You've always said you maintain that there are too many games at the American
Very
Hockey League.
Very much so. Level. Yeah, there is, Jerry. And these formulas and all this stuff about people talking. New Jersey Devils back in the day wanted to start their own league. They were like, listen, this is ridiculous, because at that time as well, JR, in essence, you were loaning the players to the affiliates, because in the 90s, early 2000s, a lot of the American League teams, we had the team in Portland, was owned by a local owner. So we had an agreement every year. They'd pay us $1.2 million to provide players and coaches. Well, financially, 40 games, they need about $30,000 a night just to pay their bills. They would play these players 82 games. That wasn't development. Do you know what I mean? So now that most of the affiliates are owned by the NHL teams, you don't need to play 82 games. Like, these are developing players like college. 60 games is lots. And even on the playoffs, everyone says, oh, the rallying into the playoffs. I got to be honest, the baseball model for years has worked fine. I don't mind playoffs, but you could condense this thing a whole lot. So it would be nice to roll it back. And I'm a little surprised it hasn't come either further back, because as I said, 60 games allows a lot more time for development and a lot more time for off-ice training.
Yeah, that would be the hockey ops person in you speaking. The business operations person would like to say, listen, for 12 more games, so 6 more home games.
Yeah, for sure.
I
for
like
sure.
the revenue. Thank you very much.
Very much so. But if I would say in relation to a business, JR, that on the Ottawa side, and if you don't want to use Ottawa, but you know, when you look at the Montreal Canadiens, say, when I have a $80 million U.S. payroll at the NHL level, maybe $2 to $3 million, but what I've also put into development of the players, both salary-wise and in drafting, you should put that kind of under an R&D budget that, hey, if you can make money at the American League level, but this is all part of your research and development costs that shouldn't be that big on a, you know, $500, $600, $700, $800 million franchise right now.
I read this yesterday, so I wanted to bring it up for people, and I think most people are of the opinion, and Toronto Maple Leaf fans acknowledge this and the rest of us kind of go, oh, this is why it drives us crazy, the coverage of the Maple Leafs. The playoff ratings in Canada for the first, now I don't have the ratings obviously for last night's game with Montreal, but through the first 7 games of Montreal-Toronto and then the first 3 games of Montreal and Winnipeg. So the Toronto-Montreal series, the first five games, this is English Canada only, okay? So this doesn't count the French language viewers.
Yeah, yeah.
English Canada, between 3 and 4 million people watching per game.
Okay.
Which is now regular season NHL, kind of Saturday night is typically kind of close to 2 million.
Okay.
A little above, a little below, depending on the matchup.
So you're kind of doubling?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Game six and then game seven, Toronto and Montreal last Monday, 4.8 million people watched that game seven between Toronto and Montreal. That is a huge, huge number. That's in English Canada only.
Okay.
Games one and two in Winnipeg, Montreal. Half of that.
Oh, yeah.
2.3 million.
Yeah.
So,
and,
listen,
and a million of that was cattle in Manitoba with TVs.
So you have, like with everything, you have to follow the money.
Oh, yeah.
It is what it is because Toronto is the cash cow.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have more fans than anybody else in English Canada by far. The television ratings reflect that. I know it drives everybody else, including me, crazy at times. But it's the bean counters at the end of the day. Look at that, and they go, you know, when Sportsnet paid, Rogers paid $5.2 billion 7 years ago for the exclusive rights, they would have counted on the Toronto Maple Leafs at some point in the first 7 years to play beyond one round of the playoffs, let alone a couple of years not even making the playoffs, and then in every other year losing in the first round of the playoffs. At some point, the bean counters would be going, yeah, we'll get some return our investment here, but it hasn't happened just yet. But that, you know, they're a ratings juggernaut. Yeah. There is no denying that.
No, and to that, Jer, as fired up as we all get about all the Leafs talk on it, the very silent group is a majority watching that if you did it the other way and kept showing Habs, and especially in this case, Jets, well, those people would just be turning off your stations. So I respect it. The one thing I don't know, and again, this isn't a taking a run at another network, am if I missed something in the past that, have they always shown this many highlights in an intermission? Like highlight packages?
Of what, the other games?
Yeah. No. No, each person on that thing has their own highlight package every period. And I'm like, I don't even remember this happening once, let alone every single person.
Well, it used to be Don Cherry, right? So.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Okay, but I just have been inundated by, I'm like, oh, come on. Like, let's not go to another highlight package here.
Well,
that's
I don't know, and again, we're sitting here from afar, easy to be critical.
Oh,
I don't know
for
the the necessity of having a second panel. So we got our first panel, and then let's throw it up to the other panel. That just seems to be paying a lot of people. And listen, they all have good insights for the most part. Well, some of them do. They all have insights. I can only, you know.
You downgraded that from good to insights, which if you are on there, you must bring something.
Well, let's just put it this way. Usually the first people to speak are the best, and then things sort of fall off from there for the most part. All right. We'll leave it right there. Tonight, by the way, two more Stanley Cup playoff games. Early game, I think it's a 6:30. Let me look at my sheet here. Yeah, 6:30. Tampa at Carolina, must win for the Hurricanes. Feels like, is that a series had a couple of two-day breaks between games? Feels like every time I'm kind of wanting to tune, they're not playing again. So they haven't played in a couple of days. Of course, they had a crazy game on Saturday, I think it was.
Well, I keep talking about the Final Four, and I have to double-check to make sure Tampa hasn't moved on.
Exactly.
No, and that's kind of speaks to the markets and, as you said, the extended series.
Yeah, Lightning are up 3-1, so they'll try to close out Carolina tonight in Game 5 in Carolina. And then at 9 o'clock, people have been saying Vegas and Colorado's been off the charts. The two games in Vegas were pretty lopsided, actually, in Vegas' favor, but the series is 2-2. The all-important Game 5 goes tonight back in Colorado, and that one faces off at 9 o'clock. We'll take a break just past 9 a.m. We'll get you the latest news, run down the scoreboard, all the details on the Habs. Moving on to the Final Four, semifinal, round three, whatever you want to call it, with a overtime win over Winnipeg. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Ottawa Senator Connor Brown talking about his unbelievable World Hockey Championship personal performance and that Team Canada performance as well. We'll do that when we return right here on TSN 1200.